Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Writer Stephen Graham Jones's work is often darkly playful, incorporates social commentary and horror, as well as history. He's the author of the Indian Lake trilogy. The first installment, My Heart is a Chainsaw, won the 2021 Bram Stoker Award. The second in this series has just been released. It's called Don't Fear the Reaper, and it further investigates the slasher subgenre of horror. We're reintroduced to the protagonist, Jade Daniels, characterized as a, quote, an angry part Indian outcast from a small rural lake town where a serial killer terrorized residents just 4 years earlier. Jade, a slasher film enthusiast, found herself right at the center of an investigation after two mysterious deaths. First, a young Danish boy visiting America for the first time, then one of the founders of a new neighborhood development nearby. Determined to help her former classmate, Letha, become the final girl who trumps the killer, Jade puts all her knowledge of slasher films to use. Stephen Graham Jones joins us. Excuse me. Stephen Graham Jones is the New York Times bestselling author of The Only Good Indians. That's the last time he was on the show. A review for the new book, Don't Fear the Reaper, says, tucked into his warm, propulsive prose is a white-hot coal of raw emotional might and relentless honesty, which heightens every horror yarn he spins. Don't Fear the Reaper, his much-anticipated sequel to My Heart is a Chainsaw, is proof of this gift, and that makes it an early contender for Best Horror Novel of 2023. Stephen Graham Jones joins us now to talk about the Indian Lake trilogy, at least two-thirds of it. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Also want to make sure you know that he will be at the Strand Bookstore for a live in-person event later on tonight at 7 p.m. Did you always know this was going to be a trilogy?
I did not. This started out as a standalone, and it became a trilogy when my editor, Joe Monti, asked me to do the ending differently such that everyone didn't die. And once people were alive, they could be part of a book two and a book three.
How do you work on a trilogy?
You kind of stage it where book one is act one, book two is act two, and book three is act three, which puts you on an escalation ramp. So it's got to get louder, bloodier, gorier.
Louder, faster, stronger. Do you know what each book is going to be about as you do book act one, act two, act three? Or do you write act one and then, okay, now I got to figure out act two?
That's how I do it. I try to give it all away with each installment such that there's nothing left. And then I go pick through the ashes and see if I can find a narrative thread to pull out to keep this story going.
Dark Mill South. Let's talk about the latest villain in Don't Fear the Reaper. A serial killer who has got a specific number of people he wants to kill. 38. I believe he gets to 35, if I remember, in the beginning. Why 38?
Because in 1862, 38 Dakota men were hanged for basically resisting colonialism. And that was right at the Civil War times. Abraham Lincoln was the one who signed off on it. And some of the trials lasted less than 5 minutes. And that's something that I think he and all of us can be justifiably angry about.
As I mentioned, you put history in your book, as you just said. Mm-hmm. Do you collect historical facts and sort of, you know, squirrel them away for the right time?
As for these 38 Dakota men who were hanged, that really comes from a poem by Lely Long Soldier, a beautiful, beautiful poem. I read that every day for, I feel like, 6 weeks, and I feel like it was part of me.
What time of day did you read that poem?
Usually when I would start out the day, so 8 or 9 o'clock.
In the morning?
Yes.
And then how did that set your tone for the day?
It felt like it recentered me a little bit. It reminded me that there's work to be done.
Are you someone who, it sounds like you have rituals towards your writing?
You know, it's easy to fall into rituals. The trick is, once you kind of gather rituals to you to make your writing session better, you're really stalking yourself with excuses not to write, because you don't have the glass of tea, you don't have the cat, you don't have the candle, all that stuff. So, but luckily, Lely's poem is online, so I could find it wherever I was.
Okay, so I went a little tangent there about writing, but let me come back to Dark Mill South. Would you read a little bit so we can learn a little bit more about this person?
I'd be honored to. Thank you. In the summer of 2015, a rough beast slouched out of the shadows and into the waking nightmares of an unsuspecting world. His name was Dark Mill South, but that wasn't the only name he went by. Cowpoking through Wyoming, working the feed line, as they used to call it, he'd been the East Fork Strangler. not because he ever hung his hat in the East Fork bunkhouse or rode their fences, but because he'd somehow come into possession of one of their 246 branding irons and had taken the time with each victim to get that brand glowing red to leave his mark. For that season, he'd been propping his dead up behind snow fences, always facing north. It wasn't necessarily a Native American thing. Dark Mill South was Ojibwe out of Minnesota. It was, he would say later, just polite, after all he'd put them through. His manners extended to six men and women that winter of 2013. Come spring melt, the East Fork Strangler lobbed his branding iron into the chug water and drifted up into Montana, where the newspapers dubbed him the 90i Slasher. It was supposed to have been the I-90 Slasher, since Dark Mill South's reign of terror had extended up and down I-90 from Billings to Butte, but the intern typing it into the crawl on the news feed had flipped it around to 90i. By that evening, 90i had gone viral, and so was another boogeyman born.
That was Stephen Graham Jones reading from Don't Fear the Reaper. This is a question I was wondering as I'm reading. So for people, because radios, because you can't see, it's one font at the beginning of the book and for most of the story. And then, but when it's Dark Mill, it's a different font. Tell me a little bit about that decision, when that came about.
The first book, My Heart is a Chainsaw, is intercut with high school history papers that Jade Daniels, the protagonist, writes. And Don't Fear the Reaper is also intercut with papers that someone is writing, which is why the font changes and the typeface, the formatting changes for these insertions into the narrative.
And do you visualize them as you're writing, or is that something you deal with the art direction?
I leave it to the book designer and the layout person. They're much better at that than I am. But I do, I think, envision the person who is writing it as they're writing it.
And for people who are listening to you, you do have an accent. So we're going to talk about growing up in Texas, living in Texas. Mm-hmm. That's when you reportedly, in some of the articles I read about you, that you that's when you first got into slashers. Do you remember the first film that had an impression on you?
Yeah, that would be Halloween, 1978. And I didn't see that film until well into the 80s, but when I must have been 6 years old, I was born in 72, I was sleeping on the floor of my grandmother's house way out in the country. We couldn't even see another porch light. We lived out so far. And my aunt and uncle lived on the same property in a little camper trailer out on the corner by the fence. And they were the most amazing people in the world. They were giants of my world. They were titans. They could do no wrong. And then about 2 a.m, there comes a knock on the door, and I huddle up to the door in my blanket, answer it, and it's my aunt and uncle. They're wrapped in a single blanket, and they said, "Hey, Stevie, can we come sleep on the floor with you?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, but what for?" And they said, "We just went to town and saw Halloween, and we can't sleep in our camper anymore." And I distinctly remember stepping aside while they huddled past so I could hold the screen door open and looking out into that darkness and knowing that there was something out there that could make these amazing people have to come sleep on the cold floor with me, and it was Michael Myers from Halloween.
That's such a good story. So when you saw it finally, what drew you in?
What drew me in was the pervasive sense of dread, that paired with the back and forth between the characters, they actually felt like high school girls, thanks to Deborah Hill, who mm-hmm. co-wrote the screenplay with John Carpenter. But John Carpenter's framing and camera work and score were what gave it the dread. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that Michael Myers has no discernible motivation to do what he does. As Dr. Loomis says, he's just pure evil, and there's nothing you can do with that. You can't mediate it, make it better.
You know, a lot of kids are scared of horror films. Why weren't you scared? Or maybe you were scared,
I should say. I was scared, and I continue to be scared. I think that might be why I write horror, because I am so scared of everything.
You keep, what is it about horror, or for you, that makes people come back to it? You know, you get scared.
Yeah, you do.
Voluntarily do it to yourself again.
You do. That is kind of the fundamental catch that people don't understand with horror, mm-hmm. is why be attracted to this essentially displeasurable thing that's going to give you weird feelings inside and steal your sleep and give you nightmares. You know, I think I don't come to horror for the terror and the dread. I come to horror for that sigh after the jump scare where you realize you're alive. And that feeling of aliveness is what I'm addicted to with horror, I feel like.
Have you seen Megan?
Oh, yeah. I love Megan. Yeah.
All right, tell me what you like about this movie, Megan, which is, I think, surprised a lot of people at how popular it is.
I like how the gradient up to her doing what she does is so gradual. We understand every step. It makes sense in the way she thinks, and that makes it more dangerous and scary for us, I think.
My guest is Stephen Graham Jones. The new book is called Don't Fear the Reaper. It is the second in the series. The first one is My Heart is a Chainsaw. Where do the titles for these two come from?
You know, the title for My Heart is a Chainsaw was not the original title I had on it. My editor, Joe Monti, he didn't tell me to change it to My Heart is a Chainsaw, but he said to change it away from the terrible title I had. And so I had to dream up a new title.
Okay, what's the terrible title?
It was Lake Access Only, which I thought was a great title.
Lake Access Only?
Yeah, the Terra Nova establishment on the other side of the lake. You can only get to it by lake. You can't drive there. You can't really, you know, pole vault there. But then Don't Fear the Reaper was the title I had while working on it, and it's the title on the outside of the book now. So I was lucky that it got to stick.
Very funny. When I talk about, and when one talks about slasher culture being a subgenre of horror, could you explain that a little bit to people, like why it's considered a subgenre, why it's not necessarily its own genre?
Yeah, well, I mean, horror is a big umbrella, and it covers zombies, werewolves, haunted houses, oftentimes serial killers, and definitely slashers. Just like, I mean, I think most little like corners of the bookshelf are like that. It's one big umbrella over a lot of subdivisions. But as for the slasher itself, I think the slasher is preoccupied with the justice fantasy. They are justice fantasies. Mm-hmm. They are someone was wronged or disturbed, and now a spirit of vengeance has risen to exact justice or to rebalance the world. And in today, you know, the world we live in, we see people doing atrocious things at microphones and podiums, and they at the end, they wave and everybody claps and they walk away. And that leaves us feeling like our world is not just, it's not fair. But for 2 hours at a time, for 6 hours at a time, we can engage a slasher, a justice fantasy in the form of a slasher, and feel like there is a possibility for things to make sense.
What is a challenge? I'm sure there are many in writing in this genre.
The biggest challenge with putting slashers down on the page is that it's a genre that grew up in the cinema. So a lot of its techniques have film stuff baked in. So you have to kind of come up with workarounds, but there's also a lot of freedom there because you can do things on the page you can't do on the screen. And I really am enjoying that.
Yeah, in the first chapter of Don't Fear the Reaper, a character suddenly has his intestines in his hands.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah,
and it's just sort of like, oh my gosh, it just happens.
Mm-hmm. And his hands are numb, so he doesn't know what he's holding at first, which was really fun to do.
How do you know if you've gone too far? Or is there, maybe there isn't too far, I don't know.
If there is too far, I'm still reaching for it, but I think that's how you know you're writing good stuff, if you start to get nervous that you might have gone too far. That's how you know you're doing good horror, if you start to get nervous. If I ever feel confident I'm in the right place, then I'm probably not writing horror.
Your protagonist also is obsessed with horror, loves slasher. How does that help tell this story?
It helped me a whole lot because I didn't have to do research, you know? If she would have been into tennis, then I would have been lost. I don't know anything about tennis, but luckily I know a lot about slashers, so I was able to feed some of that to her. But no, I share so much with Jay Daniels, the protagonist of My Heart is a Chainsaw and Don't Fear the Reaper. We were both custodians in high school. We both got kicked out of school for our t-shirt choices, and I used to try to change my hair color, and I smuggled so much of my like life into Jade, I feel like.
Oh, so okay. So if we're reading, we get some Easter eggs about you.
Yeah.
Are there Easter eggs about slasher films? I don't know enough about slasher films to pick them up, but I'm sure someone who does could.
There are. Yeah, you can go on Letterboxd. People make lists of all the slasher references in My Heart is a Chainsaw and Don't Fear the Reaper, and they go like 160, 200 items long. And I've never checked them because I don't remember. I didn't have a list. I wanted to pour this book and this movie and this character. Mm-hmm. I didn't go at it like that. I let things rise organically. But because of that, I didn't track all the references. So I leave that to other people.
My guest is Stephen Graham Jones. The first book is My Heart is a Chainsaw. The second, which is just out, is Don't Fear the Reaper. Why is it set in Idaho?
It's set in Idaho because I wanted to, like, Jade is Blackfeet, and the Blackfeet, we're out of Montana. I'm not out of Montana. I'm from West Texas, but the Blackfeet's ancestral home is northern Montana, right up against the 49th parallel, right up against Canada. I set it in Idaho because I wanted Jade to be remote from her culture, her heritage, her history, her language, her people, because I fear that too many Indian stories in the world today propose that there's a single native narrative.
It's monolith, a monolith.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to, that would be the most violence I could do, was to have somebody out there believe that to be native, you have to know the language, or you have to know the history, or you have to be plugged into your community, because that just disregards all the infants who were abducted and adopted out, and they didn't grow up in the culture. But I don't think because of that, that they're not Indian. I think they're just as Indian as any of us. And so I wanted to put Jade at a good remove from the reservation, such that I could establish her as being distinctly native, but it's not because she knows the word for elk in Blackfoot.
Mm-hmm. Tangent, another tangent, because this made me think. You know, there's been just recently more interest, more mainstream interest in Native culture from Reservation Dogs, and we talked about the new Showtime series about Murder and Bighorn. Mm-hmm. Do you welcome it?
I do. Yeah, I like that it's not necessarily a recentering, but it's less invisibility. And that's what America wants. America is always trying to turn Native people into elves. They want us to be stewards of the forest and, you know, to commune with nature and all that stuff. But that's the same mechanism by which we become elves, which are fantasy creatures. And when you're drafting new law or dealing with existing treaties, you don't have to deal with imaginary creatures. And so it's very important that the world understand that we're still here, that the genocide was completely unsuccessful.
And when you said that, the elves made me think about all those movies where there's a magical Negro Black people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and in Native culture, that we usually get portrayed as a medicine man sitting up on a butte in a John Wayne movie, and we give some sacred knowledge, and I'll call those coin drop characters. Like, you walk up to the medicine man, put a quarter in his mouth, and he spouts something mystic and holy, and then you leave, and he's completely disposable.
Coin drop. I like that. Let's talk a little bit more about Jade and her family. How would you describe your protagonist's family dynamic?
Terrible. It couldn't be worse. She is an outsider as far as her mother and father are concerned. She has no siblings. Mm-hmm. And she's also an outsider at her high school, and she's an outsider in her community of Proof Rock, Idaho. She doesn't fit in anywhere. So she has tried to find a way to fit in with the slasher. And she is, in My Heart is a Chainsaw, she got the prayer answered that she had been praying for so long, that a slasher would come to town and balance out the scales, make things just. But by the time Don't Fear the Reaper happens, she realizes that's a bad wish to make. You don't want a slasher coming to your town.
Because he shows up just as she gets out of prison.
Yeah, she's just getting out of all her legal difficulties stemming from the events of My Heart is a Chainsaw, which a lot of slashers never deal with the consequences of all these bodies on the floor. And so I wanted this to be in the real world. And I think if it's in the real world, there's going to be consequences.
Jade is really into this idea of the final girl. Mm-hmm. First of all, what is a final girl, for people who don't know?
A final girl in a slasher is basically the antidote to this cycle of violence. She's the one who can put the slasher down, usually because she's not in his purview. She is outside of his, like, justice field. And all her friends die, her pets die, her parents die, her teachers die. She's the last one standing, and she runs and screams for a while, and sometimes she falls down while she's running. But she finally decides that her life is important enough that she's going to fight for it. So she turns around and faces this bully down. That's really what the final girl is. She's a model for how we can resist bullies.
In oldie times, sometimes the final girl, though, had some sort of characteristic to her that made her seem like she was better than others.
Yes, you're right. They're kind of stereotyped as virginal, academic, mousy, and all that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's actually part of it. I think that's kind of like trash that's accumulated on the snowball of the final girl as she rolls through the decades. I think that what exceptionalizes the final girl and lets her finally survive is she's vigilant. She pays attention to her surroundings. She understands that branch breaking out in the darkness might be something. Everybody else disregards it and turns the music up, but she pays attention.
Why can't Jade be a final girl?
Jade doesn't think she fits the pre-existing mold of a final girl. Over the decades, the final girl has been transformed into this sterling, perfect, beautiful angel princess warrior. And that's wonderful and fun and exciting to experience as an audience. However, it also makes the form, the model of the final girl so exclusive and difficult to inhabit that she's no longer useful as a model for how to resist bullies. And Jade does not match those ideals of the final girl, so she feels that she can never be a final girl. But what I want to argue with these books is that being a final girl is on the inside, it's not on the outside.
Is the third book finished?
It is. I turned it in August.
Oh, wow. Sorry, just blew people's ears out. I didn't know. Wow. Is there, can you give us any sort of little taste of something? Or maybe if somebody's going to go pick up Don't Fear the Reaper and read it, maybe there's something in here you want them to pay attention to that helps set up the next book?
There's seeds of three in Chainsaw and in Reaper, which was really fun for me to draw out and water and let grow. But whereas Don't Fear the Reaper jumps from head to head, character to character, such that we can get a more textured understanding of this community who has suffered this trauma. This third book, and I almost said the title, I'm not supposed to say the title of it. this third Chainsaw book, Indian Lake Trilogy book, is more Jade-centric. I can say it that way, probably.
More Jade-centric. All right, we got something. New York Times bestselling author Stephen Graham Jones will be at the Strand Bookstore on 12th Street tonight for an in-person event at 7 p.m. The new book is called Don't Fear the Reaper. Thank you so much for coming in studio.
It was great talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Raindrops are falling on my head. Just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed. Nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head. They keep falling. So I just did need some time.
We wanted to acknowledge the passing of a great songwriter. Three-time Academy Award winner Burt Bacharach died Wednesday at age 94. He was a son of New York City, born in Kansas City, but raised from the age of four in Forest Hill, Queens. According to our colleagues at NPR, quote, his father was a columnist, his mother was a musician. She insisted her son practice cello, drums, and piano. As a teenager, the young Bacharach snuck into jazz clubs to see Dizzy Gillespie and Count Basie, end quote. Classically trained, he began his career with his frequent collaborator Hal David here in New York City at the Brill Building. He'd go on to create some of the most sophisticated pop songs of the 60s, many of them sung by Dionne Warwick, like this one.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by.
Burt Bacharach went on to win three Academy Awards, one for his score for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and a Song Award for Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head from that soundtrack. A decade later, he won Best Song again for the theme from Arthur, and he was awarded the Gershwin Award from the Library of Congress that said he, quote, set creative standards. Just last month, Bacharach announced a box set of songs with another collaborator of more than two decades, Elvis Costello. The songs of Bacharach and Costello is set to be released on March 3rd. So let's go out on Elvis Costello performing one of Bacharach's hits.